Just 1 year plus 6 hours ago, North Korean communist troops crossed the 38th parallel in force. There's nothing glamorous about the war they started.
They're throwing him in very fast now.
You are listening to a new program presented by the NBC News and Special Events Department. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Great issues out of the past, problems of the present, prospects for the future. This week, the first anniversary of the Korean War. You will hear the transcribed voices of President Truman, General MacArthur, and dozens of nameless fighting men. To bring you their story, here is George Hicks.
What were you doing just 1 year plus 6 hours ago? Here in the NBC newsroom, we were watching the progress of an election in North Carolina. An attorney named Willis Smith was defeating Frank Graham in a race for the United States Senate. A railroad strike was in progress. Otherwise, it was a normally dull Saturday night. We were not even overly excited when the first bulletins came in telling us that North Korean troops had crossed the 38th parallel. There had been dozens of skirmishes along the parallel, and at first glance, there was little to indicate that this was any more serious than the rest. But during the night, our concern increased, and by Sunday afternoon, we had begun to realize that this was war or something very like it. We cleared time for a radio talk by Secretary of State Dean Acheson.
On Saturday afternoon, it was just before daybreak on Sunday morning in Korea, without warning and without provocation, Communist forces of the North launched a coordinated full-scale assault on the Republic of Korea.
Our attention was centered on the United Nations in New York and the White House in Washington. The United Nations officially sanctioned President Truman's decision to send air and naval forces to the aid of the South Koreans. We were given to believe that that might be enough. We heard from a grave President Truman as he stepped out of a plane returning him to Washington from his home in Missouri.
Gentlemen, we face a serious situation. We hope we face it in the cause of peace. The only reason for the action which was taken on advice of all the brains that I could muster was hoping, always hoping, that we'll finally arrive at the peace in the world which we anticipated when we created the United Nations. That's the only reason for the action.
The American soldiers stationed in Japan were green occupation troops, but it was plain that they had to go. They became fighting men in a hurry, learning their trade in the toughest of all military actions, retreat. Retreat back from Seoul, back from Yongdong, retreat from Taejon. But on July 18th, we struck again. The 1st Cavalry landed at Pohang.
And it's just dawn here on board this control vessel off the Korean coast. All gunners are at their stations. The shore is just appearing out of a rosy haze. Everyone is standing by waiting for the next order, which will probably come in a few minutes to put the boats over the side.
The control officer reports that wave 8 has just hit the beach. From now on, the ship-to-shore movement will be concerned with the second trip of boats, which will land the remaining two battalions as soon as possible.
General Douglas MacArthur made the first of many trips to the Korean front. In those days of retreat, it was a confident Supreme Commander who spoke to NBC correspondent Bill Dunn.
I am completely confirmed in the estimates I made to the President of the United States last week that the enemy lost his great chance for victory in the last 3 weeks. That does not mean that victory passes to us instantly or without a long, hard road and a most difficult struggle. But I was never more confident of victory, ultimate victory in my life, than I am now. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
The South Korean government threw in all the troops it had, such as they were. They marched up to the front to join us in retreat. And as they marched, they sang. What we later came to call the Great Debate was starting on the bloody terrain of Korea. The diplomats were calling this a police action. It was more than that to the men who had to fight it.
This affair is more than a police action. It's something gigantic.
And as we fell back, the roads were clogged with refugees. Some of them refugees, in fact, many of them communist agents. How to tell a North Korean from a South Korean? Well, first, you ask him.
My name is Lee Ho-taek. My brother, my mother, my sister, all lose. I am a middle school church, and I am a middle school boy, now 18 years old. I go to Sunday and Wednesday, every time go to church.
Then you make him prove it, and you believe he is loyal when he sings this hymn.
믿는 사람 들어 군병 같으니 앞에 가신 줄을 따라갑시다.
Now we are remembering how to wage war, remembering the American technique of piling in the materiel, remembering what we learned at Anzio about breaking out of a defense perimeter. We call this one the Pusan beachhead.
What's the progress of the advance, Colonel?
I'm not a colonel. I'm a captain in the Navy, a brigade surgeon. All I can tell you about is the casualties. They're running, I'd say, moderately high, mostly rifle fire, with some shrapnel, which doesn't cause too serious injuries. Quite a bit of heat exhaustion from the mountainous terrain. But we're not evacuating those cases. We hold them here close to the lines for about 24 to 36 hours and then send them back to duty.
As the tempo of our offensive increased, we knew that something big was brewing.
I'm standing next to a Marine battery now, which is about to fire on the position which was strafed and rocketed by the Navy planes a few minutes ago. They are getting their positions by telephone from forward observers, and they are about to fire.
Give me the deflection for this, Bleedle. Give me the deflection reading for it.
General MacArthur summoned up his World War II experience with amphibious landings, massed an armada, and on September 15th stormed the beach at Incheon. From the south, our troops moved up to liberate Seoul, and NBC's Ken Cantor crossed the Han River with the Marines.
We're now in Seoul. We're just coming up the bank of the Han River on the Seoul side of the river.
Right, that's kind of bumpy, too.
Yeah, that is kind of bumpy. We just came up the bank on the Seoul side of the river. We are in Seoul. If this is Seoul, God be with us. We're trying to get these Red Koreans across the river now. They're running fast.
Hold it! Cease firing! Pass away the first cease fire!
Well, this is George 6. If those are Army troops, what the hell are they doing shooting at us?
Here we go again. They say we're going to be in reserve. You know what that stuff means. Watch it.
Let's get over
here. Say, I want to get my rifle there.
Right there. Don't worry about it. Well, he's got it here. Thanks.
We just ran from that. Those are sniper bullets coming into us. We're digging in the dirt behind the ridge here. There's one of the men, one of the GIs that just came across.
Yeah, it's Germany during the war.
How do you like this
for us? Don't like it.
We swept north, destroying the North Korean armies, and General MacArthur told the troops they might expect to be home by Christmas. Our patrol stood on the Yalu River. They looked across the frozen Changjin Reservoir into Red China. For a moment, they seized victory, clung to it, to have it roughly knocked from their hands by an angry horde of Red Chinese soldiers. And they fell back again. Back from the Changjin Reservoir, back from Pyongyang, back from Chosun, but there were no frightened voices.
We walked up in there and looked around, and all of a sudden they hit us. I don't know where the hell I came from or anything. Sure, a bunch of them.
Everything broke loose. They opened up with everything they had. We pulled our flanks down off the hills, set up a close perimeter, just dug in and let loose with everything we had.
Well, I was one of the lucky ones, I guess. I was trying to get back to my company, but I just couldn't make it. I mean, I was running around, wandering around from different places for about 3 or 4 days.
A lot of us was tired from running, crawling, ducking, and looking at our buddies go down.
Most of the men in my company, which were very few, did manage to get out. From what I saw, a lot of us got out with the tanks, just walking behind the, and alongside.
We got most of them out. My squad leader was killed. We have a few lieutenants missing, a few wounded, but most of them got out.
If it hadn't have been for the tanks moving back and firing right over our heads, that the casualties would have been terrifically higher than they were.
These hills, one after the other, are higher than the other one, and they're all covered with Chinese. And the only way we'll ever stop them is to get more men while we still have the time to do it.
Remember, the firstest is the bestest, and that's the only way you're going to win.
That was the great debate as the fighting men saw it in December. A bitter General Douglas MacArthur spoke up, too.
This sneak attack, far more infamous than was the Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor, was surreptitiously launched in defiance of all internationally recognized obligations of a war declaration before initiating belligerency. The command had no means of preventing or even seriously obstructing such a sudden onslaught. Considering that the entire military might of Communist China is available against this relatively small command only by maneuver may it avoid the hazards inherent in the great odds which it now faces.
We were falling back below the 38th parallel, and in Seoul there was a kind of grim gaiety. This is Ken Cantor at a GI nightclub, the Capital Club.
Many of these boys here have just come back from the front. They've known both the glory of offenses and the sadness of retreat. And a piano. Five pieces, and listen to that. like home, Major?
Yeah, well, it is.
You don't... Your wife might hear this. Be careful.
That's all right.
I love the Major.
Huh?
I love the Major.
You love the Major. You love the Major. Well.
Number one.
Both, incidentally, could well be the Dragon Lady.
Just a slight interruption, ladies and gentlemen. We will now continue with Boogie Woogie.
This is Ken Canner signing off at the Capitol Club in Seoul, Korea. By the time you hear this, the situation here on the Western Front in Korea might be quite different.
We evacuated Seoul a few days later and stabilized our lines to the south. But the business of learning about a new enemy had come hard, and the fighting men didn't like it.
I have a Chinese prisoner of war here, a bugler. He's going to play the Chinese Communist bugle call for attack.
This wasn't my first time to hear the bugles blow, and I wouldn't mind it so bad if they could do a decent job. It sounds like a bunch of rookies. They more or less scream through those things, and it really, really harasses the devil out of you.
Yeah, I didn't like the sound of the bugles when they was playing. They just kept charging as fast as we fired, they kept coming. Finally, we got them stopped before they got through.
Now again, we were ready for the offensive. We had a new objective. Destroy the Chinese communists. General Almond expressed limited optimism.
The initiation of the attack this morning was according to schedule. They have the enemy on the run and are killing hundreds of them, according to our expectation. I have nothing but the highest hopes for the success of this particular operation.
General MacArthur thought we should be doing more. In an interview with correspondents in Tokyo, he plainly implied that he wanted additional authority.
Vital decisions have yet to be made. Decisions far beyond the scope of the authority vested in me as the military commander. Decisions which are neither solely political nor solely military, but which must provide on the highest international levels an answer to the obscurities which now becloud the unsolved problems raised by Red China's undeclared war.
It was in April that General MacArthur wrote his famous letter to Congressman Joseph Martin. Congressman Martin read it on the floor of the House.
Dear Congressman Martin, I am most grateful for your note of the 8th. Your view with respect to the utilization of the Chinese forces on Formosa is in conflict with neither logic nor this tradition. It seems strangely difficult for some to realize that here in Asia is where the communist conspirators have elected to make their play for global conquest, and that we have joined the issue thus raised on the battlefield, that here we fight Europe's war with arms, while the diplomats there still fight it with words.
It was Wednesday, April 11th, that correspondents in Washington were summoned from their beds for a White House news conference. At shortly past 1 a.m., NBC White House correspondent Frank Bergholzer called for an open microphone to the full network and broadcast the bulletin.
President Truman tonight fired General MacArthur, relieved him of all of his commands in the Far East. President Truman says, "With deep regret, I have concluded that General of the Army Douglas MacArthur is unable to give his wholehearted support to the policies of the United States government and of the United Nations in matters pertaining to his official duties. In view of the specific responsibilities imposed upon me by the Constitution of the United States," says the President, "and the added responsibility which has been entrusted to me by the United Nations, I have decided that I must make a change of command in the Far East. I have therefore relieved General MacArthur of his commands and have designated Lieutenant General Matthew B. Ridgway as his successor."
The hurricane in Korea had reaped the storm in Washington. This was Congressman Joe Martin.
It is a black page in American history when a Dean Acheson triumphs and a Douglas MacArthur falls.
Administration senators lined up behind President Truman. This was Senator McFarland.
I do not see how any American citizen who thinks this problem through can help feeling the president could have done anything but to take some affirmative action against General MacArthur when he felt that his policies were not receiving the general's loyal support.
The battle lines were drawn and the congressman advanced. One major engagement began on Blair Moody's radio program. First, Senator Capehart.
Let me talk just a moment. I'm going to say something else to you. And the American people are back of me on it. And that is that anybody or any nation that are sympathetic with the communist China today, and I take it from your debate here today, you and Senator Humphrey, that you are.
That is absolutely vilification.
Because you're not for going over there and fighting him. You're even keeping the nationalist government from fighting him. That you're not opposed to the communist government in China. And I say to you, you're not fundamentally opposed to us.
Well, all I can say is that Senator Indiana is a prevaricator and deliberately indulging in falsehood and character assassination. This is an outrage.
I say to you, it's true, and I stand by.
May I say to you, Senator Capehart, that's a libelous statement. I've been
no more libelous than what you said a moment ago about me.
It's a libelous statement. I've
not libelous, and I stand on it, and I'll continue to stand on it.
I fought communism before you ever were heard of. I fought more strenuously and vehemently against communism than you ever saw.
Your time is up, and our thanks tonight go to Senators Capehart of Indiana, Lehman of New York, Taft of Ohio, and Humphrey of Minnesota. This is Blair Moody signing off now in Washington.
There are several versions of what happened next, but there are those who will say that Senator Capehart and Senator Humphrey had a brief fistfight. President Truman was in a fighting mood, too.
I believe that we must try to limit the war to Korea for these vital reasons, to make sure that the precious lives of our fighting men are not wasted, to see that the security of our country and the free world is not needlessly jeopardized, and to prevent a third world war. A number of events have made it evident that General MacArthur did not agree with that policy. I have therefore considered it essential to relieve General MacArthur so that there would be no doubt or confusion as to the real purpose and aim of our policy. It was with the deepest personal regret that I found myself compelled to take this action. General MacArthur is one of our greatest military commanders. But the cause of world peace is much more important than any individual.
General MacArthur flew back to the United States for a welcome home, which in some places was almost hysterical. In Chicago, he gave his opinion of the policy outlined by the president.
What is our policy in Korea? The tragedy is that since the advent of the war with Red China, there has been no definition of the political policy which would provide a solution for the new problems thereby created. This has resulted in a policy vacuum heretofore unknown to war.
Congress launched an investigation, announced as an effort to find the answer to why General MacArthur was fired. But if there had been a firm answer after millions of words of testimony, in Korea it could not have been heard above the noise.
They're throwing him in very fast now. Here's a GI digging his foxhole.
Not wasting any time. He's going right ahead with his digging.
Okay. You have to excuse the voice because I'm kind of tired now. Digging foxholes.
How long have you been digging here?
Well, about half an hour.
Yeah. Well, you got a nice deep one here.
Yeah, it takes a deep one.
The Chinese communists stopped Operation Killer and pushed us back again. Our fighting men dug into their deep foxholes, held and counterattacked. But where is the decision? Will there be a victory? When will it end? We ask the fighting men for their opinions.
Personally, I don't think it'll be much longer. At least I hope so anyway.
Well, I think it's going to be a long, drawn-out war, about 7 years. And that's the way a lot of guys think.
I don't know. I think maybe about 6-7 more months will fix it up here.
My reserve time gets up in April 51-52. I imagine I'll be leaving by then. But war, I think, go on indefinitely, because neither side wants to give up.
Here's a Marine. What do you think about the war?
Well, I don't think about it. I just want to get out of here and get home.
We must face the fact that there's no glamour in this war. The men don't feel like heroes marching off to the brave sound of trumpets. They want to come home. But they know the best we can do for them right now is the rotation system. Bring home those oldest in point of service there as quickly as we can replace them. So they fight, and when they're not fighting, they sit and sing the rotation blues.
I'm a lonely soldier sitting in Korea. I'm a lonely soldier sitting in Korea. But rotation's coming, so I oughtn't to have no fear. I'm gonna pack my bags and go back o'er the sea. I'm gonna pack my bags and go back o'er the sea. 'Cause these A-frames in Korea just don't look good on me. Well, the rain in Korea is sure is cold and wet. Yes, wet. Well, the rain in Korea sure is cold and wet. And them rotation papers sure is hard to get.
The fighting men in Korea are singing the blues for themselves, and just a little, perhaps, for the rest of the world. And the world? The free half of it is both optimistic and skeptical tonight as our diplomats study a surprise Soviet peace proposal. It was made Saturday by Russia's delegate to the United Nations, Yakov Malik. A new approach by the Kremlin, it suggests a ceasefire in Korea, withdrawal of both sides from the 38th parallel, and, most important, the communists do not base it on withdrawal of foreign troops from Korea, a deal on Formosa, admission of Red China to the United Nations. Is it just Soviet propaganda? Our State Department isn't sure. Suggests that Russia offer definite steps to end the fighting. Congressmen are doubtful. Europeans are suspicious. President Truman, scheduled to speak tomorrow on the war's anniversary, has revised his speech. Peace? The future as close as tomorrow may bring the answer. You've heard transcribed the fifth in a series of programs entitled Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, presented each week at this time by the NBC News and Special Events Department. Listen at the same time next Sunday when the subject of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow will be weapons. This is Mel Brandt speaking.
It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. Martin Kane, Private Eye, will be coming to you in a new mystery series over NBC starting July 1st. Make a program note to hear Lloyd Nolan as Martin Kane, Private Eye. Arthur Fiedler conducts the Boston Pops tomorrow on NBC.